to the Fantasy Footballers Podcast with your hosts, Andy Holloway, Jason Moore, and Mike Wright.
Welcome in! The Fantasy Footballers, Jason Moore, Mike the Fantasy Hitman, I'm Andy Holloway.
You know we're recording over here, Jay.
Oh, I know, but...
Over here on your phone.
Look, are you
Candy Crush?
Yes, look, I'm just playing a little candy. No, I'm, you know, we've got our pick six lineup today.
Okay.
You know, and I just wanted to, you know, go ahead and...
Are you going to lock it in?
I'm locking it in. I'm putting it where my mouth is. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
That's
a
smart thing to do, Mr. Mr. King.
Oh, yeah. I hope that you put one in on yours as well, Mr. King.
Yes, I did. Yes. It's always nice when Mike loses at something. He's been on such a hot streak.
Yeah.
He needed that giant head to become giant.
Just regular giant.
It's just half loss.
I know.
Loss, half win.
You're not a fool.
So nothing. Nope.
I thought you won, too, because you lost on Josh Allen not getting a rushing touchdown.
Yeah, which he did, but they actually stopped him.
Right.
Welcome into the show, Thursday, January 30th. The truth about the wide receiver position as we continue our Truth Series episodes. NFL news to talk about.
Got a big Pro Bowl primer.
No, we don't. No, we don't.
Oh, man. We were looking through some
of the... If Russell Wilson makes the Pro Bowl, I don't have a primer episode.
It is so... The Pro Bowl in the NFL is so broken. It's not broken. It's just stupid. It's just worthless and dumb. The only purpose that it serves is to hit, like, bonuses on contracts. Like,
right.
I make the Pro Bowl, I get this. They should literally just go down the list and be like, who's got a Pro Bowl bonus? Give it to that guy so that he can get his contract because no one's watching.
Well, you only get the bonus if you are alternates. It doesn't give you the bonus.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So Tyler Huntley got nothing?
No. Well, I mean, he got to put Pro Bowl on his resume.
Put all the bonuses in one of those big Scrooge McDuck things and then bring all the Pro Bowlers there and they all dive in and claim their bonuses.
Like a Hunger Games, the piggy bank?
I'd watch that.
That's more of
a Squid
Games. I
mean, would you rather watch the Pro Bowl or the Hall of Fame game?
I would rather watch probably the Pro Bowl. And I do please don't hear what I'm
not
saying.
I
do not want to watch the Pro Bowl.
The energy around the Hall of Fame game, even if the players aren't out there, is better because the season's about to start.
I'm more excited during that time of the year than during Pro Bowl weekend. But I just feel like I think if the three of us were to be given the keys to how to fix it, we could do it. We could come up with the events that we – enjoy watch that were like, I want to see who's got the strongest arm. Like way back in the day, they did that.
Yeah, they did.
They had like
Brett Favre throwing it deep.
Yeah, it's like, I want to see Josh Allen and Anthony Richardson get in that little lineup, and you can't move past this line. Who can throw it further? That's awesome. Bring that back.
Yeah, I'm interested in that.
But a lot of the games they have now, they're just goofy and dumb.
And hey, NFL. You can afford to incentivize these guys to go.
Right, because everybody turns it down.
Yeah.
I'm a little injured, or I just don't want to go, or I was playing late into the season. So you don't get Lamar Jackson. You don't get Josh Allen. You don't.
You also don't get
even get Bo Nix.
You don't get anybody from the Super Bowl now
with
how it's positioned.
But I'm saying
no matter what, which kind of seems like the best players in the league, except for the best players in the league.
Like they make, I think they increase revenue by billions every year. At least I'm looking at in 2023, the NFL generated $20 billion, which is up $2 billion from the previous year. You can figure out how to get your superstars to this event. Otherwise, let's just stop it.
Let's just do a slam dunk contest.
Oh, that would be fun.
See? Oh, NFL players doing the slam dunk contest?
Yeah.
Well, that's not what this show's about, though.
Yeah.
So we have the fantasy face-off on today's episode as well, but let's start with some news.
News and notes from around the league, presented by USAA Insurance.
He's back on the phone.
I'm doing the same thing, man.
Cliff Kingsbury will stay in Washington, not interview for the Saints head coaching job, which is also true of Mike McCarthy, who will focus on the 2026 2026 hiring cycle.
I really liked the at least how it was reported. And again, this is alleged. This has been reported that basically how it went was the Saints didn't really seem interested in Mike McCarthy, so he pulled out. It's like, you can't.
Right, I break
you
up with you.
You can't dump me. I'm breaking up with you.
So once all the teams turned him down, he's going to focus on the next year.
It also is. Like, I don't know if that's how Mike McCarthy said or if that's just what the way it's being reported. But, I mean, the coaches, I have to imagine, being a head coach, there's a bit of a fraternity, a bit of a union of, like, you're doing a job that very few other people have done. And if you're like Mike McCarthy, you're like, I'm going to focus on next year because some of y'all are getting fired. And I'm going to be there when you get fired, and I'm going to take that job.
Well, it's... Yeah,
it's just math.
It's just
it's
the
truth.
Way it works. Yeah,
but I was just saying, like the wording is.
Well, he was at he also rude. Got a little bit, unfortunately timed.
Yeah.
With the way the Cowboys handled all the negotiations are still going.
The Cowboys did that.
So here's the deal to me, the leading front runner to become the head coach for the Saints appears to be Kellen Moore, who is the Eagles' offensive coordinator right now, and we have had success. Shane Steichen, failure with the next offensive coordinator, the bringing up what they had, success with Kellen Moore. And so that would be the headline to me, right, in part.
Is the Eagles losing Kellen Moore?
The Eagles losing Kellen Moore. And then Kellen Moore brings, you know, ingenuity to the offense, so maybe the Saints can do something. But, yeah, McCarthy, it said he was supposed to interview on Friday, but he decided 2026 is his year.
Okay.
The Saints are over the cap by $50 million. So that is number one in the league. Not always the best spot to be in for a head coach coming in. Maybe that factored in as well. The Lions have hired Broncos passing game coordinator John Morton to be their new offensive coordinator.
He is 55 years old.
55!
He's primarily been an assistant offensive guy or a wide receiver coach. I believe he was a wide receiver in the NFL back in the day. But this hire was because back in 2022, with this regime, with Dan Campbell, he was part of the Detroit Lions as a senior offensive assistant. So they know him. They've worked with him. Obviously, they believe in him as they're bringing him in. This will be the first time he has been an OC, you know, play caller. It's going to be a pretty big change going from Ben Johnson.
All right, and then we did get one report that tight end Eric Aull Jr. expected to miss all of 2025 due to complications from his ACL surgery.
That stinks.
It's a bummer. He was. I mean, it wasn't like a full breakout, but like he was putting up enough noise of like, hey, this is a player that we need to pay attention to.
That was today's news and notes presented by USAA Insurance. Learn more at usaa.com/insurance. It's time for the truth.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
You know, with your current hairstyle, Jay, if you go down to more of like a goatee, I think John Morton is in the Halloween.
Yeah,
I think he could pull that off.
I think that's big time.
He really needs to elevate his name. Right now, I'd be kind of aiming down. So Morton, maybe
you don't like Morton.
If you're talking the salt, Morton's salt is just fine. I'm just saying, he doesn't really.
That's his salt.
Well, then now we're talking.
Why is he working?
Just for the love of the game.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are hearing John Morton's name for the first time
and going, that dude is 80,000 years old. Morton sounds like the oldest name to me.
It's his last name.
Yeah, I was going to say his name.
It doesn't matter.
There has to be a Morton out there, though.
I don't think there has to be.
This show's dumb. All right, the truth of the wide receiver position. We have had the opportunity to talk through quarterbacks, talk through the running back position. I encourage everybody who did not hear those episodes, scroll down on your podcast player. Take a listen if you want. Some general trends for the wide end position, wide receiver position, not the wide end. That's a different position. I think the interesting thing for me or for the landscape of the NFL, we've been doing this show for a long time. We have seen a movement recently to a lot of plays behind the line of scrimmage. We have a high percentage of targets in that 10 to 19 yard range, or maybe more prominently, we have the lowest percentage of 20 plus yard targets that we have seen since before 2018 over the past year. The fewest percentage of targets, 20 plus air yards downfield that we've ever had.
And
which it makes me sad.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. There was all, it coincided with more rushing attempts this year. It feels like as the NFL has, you know, 5-6 years ago.
Hey, are we getting this? Are we getting the
swing
back?
Yeah, it feels like we're swinging because you got, you know, more safeties deep, and you've got smaller, lighter defenders who are quicker to guard these smaller, lighter wide receivers. So it's like, hey, you remember when we had those, you know, running backs that were just awesome and really valuable? You know, now this season you saw that happen to great success.
Yeah, there's always the punch, counterpunch, offense, defense in the NFL. So, yeah, you could be right. We're seeing more of those short area targets of late. We saw 24 total receiving touchdowns on behind the line of scrimmage targets, which is more than the last 2 years combined. Kind of interesting.
Thanks, Josh Allen. And
I mean, it does work. It's been working. Xavier Worthy caught a lot of passes in that area of the field. So we are looking at the truth of the wide receiver position. General reminder for everybody out there, we calculate the truth looking at the 17 games of fantasy football relevance. We look at their consistency, the player's consistency based on how many great games, what percentage of those for wide receivers, that's 20 or more points.
Half PPR.
Good games, 12.5 or more points. Bust games, fewer than 7.5 points is how we are breaking down consistency. Not a surprise as we kick things off, but number one, Ja'Marr Chase, number one in fantasy finish, number one in consistency. First half was number four, second half was number one overall, and was drafted as the wide receiver 4 off the board. But finally delivered on the reasoning
was
of why
it,
you always took him where you took him.
Yeah, I mean, he had an all-time season. This was
a triple crown winner.
Right. So Jerry Rice, Sterling Sharp, Steve Smith, and Cooper Kupp back in 2021, only other guys who have led the league in all three of the major wide receiver categories. 17-plus touchdowns. That's only the third time in the last 30 years. Randy Moss, Devontae Adams, the only other two guys to do it.
Third
I guess Randy
guy.
Moss has done it 3 times by himself. That's why they call it Moss and Dudes, because he's his own thing. But that's what Ja'Marr Chase was this year. He was, you know, defenses couldn't stop him. You double team him, it doesn't matter. And T. Higgins being on the field is good for Ja'Marr Chase.
31% great games, so 20 or more points 31% of the time. 75% good games, 6% busts. So he had really one bust game during the entire year. Was 8 points better against bottom 16 passing defenses. It's pretty even. Home road splits, actually a little bit better on the road. And like you said, led the league in receptions, receiving yards, touchdowns. It was a monster gap between...
The gap is huge.
Between the wide receiver 1 and the wide receiver 2. So yes, he finished at 1. But having Chase and having Jefferson, there was a difference.
To give you an example of how large a difference Ja'Marr Chase is. So Ja'Marr Chase in half PPR averaged 20 fantasy points per game. Number two was Justin Jefferson, who averaged 15.6. That's the largest gap between wide receiver 1 and wide receiver 2 since 2018. But the gap between Ja'Marr Chase at 20 and Amari Cooper at 7.2 fantasy points per game, it is the biggest gap that anyone has ever seen in a trade in the league of record, which I will never let die again.
I was so trying to figure out why Amari Cooper's name
Amari
was...
Cooper for Ja'Marr Chase, and it wasn't fair.
Okay.
Would you rather have 7.2 fantasy points per game or 20?
No, sometimes you move a guy right before they become
Footland.
Useless in the NFL.
Footland. Trade on news. Trade away on news.
We've
hype
said that
news.
For years. I just wanted to prove it to you.
Yeah, hype news where it's like, what could be? If you got a guy with all the hype could
be.
Might
be a boat.
Might be a boat. Trade him for a boat, because that's what you did the day that he was, you know, Amari Cooper was traded to the Bills. Hard to remember now how excited people were.
Oh, I was very excited when that happened.
Considering how bad.
I think you started with Amari Cooper to the Bills.
Oh, people were very excited about Amari Cooper. Had like an up and down start to the year, finished last year super strong. And, you know, I had sent some trade offers, Chase and some picks for Cooper. I got them completely rejected multiple times. I tried to craft all these different deals. And then the news happened. It just timed up miraculously. The news happened and the same deal comes back to me. And that's, you know, people were grasping for Josh Allen to have his Stephon Diggs. And it's not like we hadn't seen that in Buffalo before, where one guy puts up prolific numbers. What's crazy is Allen, who we talked about on the Truth episode with quarterbacks, still had prolific numbers. It just didn't go to one guy. And great Amari news, Cooper might be toast.
Great news for Ja'Marr Chase of, like, we've already had these 4 years, now including this, like, truly elite season, and dude is not 25 yet.
Are you serious? Man, I'm going to keep him for a while, Jay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should. And if you're in a dynasty league, never let him go.
I won't. I was really saying that thing the age, that was me looking in the mirror going,
oh no,
you did great work, Mike.
It's so
you look good.
Good
today, Mike.
So good you lost, Mike, because
I was just thinking that about the league of record with you. I was
you
like
snakes,
so happy you lost.
We're two of the only people on the planet with Ja'Marr Chase that didn't win our title games,
and I am thrilled about it
because you're talking dynasty time. All right, Jefferson came in at 2. You just mentioned him. He was actually number 2 in consistency as well, so the top 2, no big surprises there. There were some bumps in the road, 13% bust games, 19% great, so didn't have as many high-end games. 75% good, though. That matches Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah, in the second half of the season, he was still very good, you know, had big games, was the number 1 wide receiver you know, in round 2 of the playoffs for the week, but he also had a handful of worse games. I don't know if that is all Sam Darnold or, you know, what it was. I'm going to take a huge L on Justin Jefferson personally in the draft season. Now, I still had him at the back of the first. I'm not, like, not drafting him in the first, but I said I did not think he had the ability with, you know, with Sam Darnold. And really, at the time during the draft season for a long time, it was J.J. McCarthy, to be able to score enough touchdowns to be top 5. Like, he was guaranteed to be top 12 because he might be the best wide receiver in the league. He just showed that he can elevate the quarterback play at his age, also 25, Mike. You know, this is a player who is just looks like he's quarterback proof.
The last 2 years with our truth metrics, 53%, 40% great games. This year down to 19%. It's actually the lowest of his career, and yet had the highest percentage of games that met that good or better standard of 12.5 points. So if I had to pick a year, I'd pick a different year than this year personally.
Yeah.
But consistency wise, he didn't end up being Justin Jefferson. He was better at home, pretty even against both types of, you know, top end, bottom end defenses. And look, we don't have to tell you, he's going to be really good and drafted very high for a very, very, very long time. Amon-Ra St. Brown was drafted as the wide receiver 5, finishes at wide receiver 3, consistency rank of 4. First half, it was 8. Second half, it was 4. 63% good games, 6% bust, 19% great, and part of the best offense in football.
Yeah, I mean, he had the lowest bust rate in the league, tied with Ja'Marr Chase at 6%. That's really what, when you draft Amon-Ra St. Brown, you're drafting a player for the best floor out there. He's just, you know, he's the clear one. You can't stop his type of routes. Like, Ja'Marr Chase has had games where he really disappears in the past. Not so much this season, but he has had games where the opposing defenses, they just really key in on him, take him out of the game, make it come elsewhere. I don't know the types of routes that Amon-Ra St. Brown is running that you can really, you just can't, you know, you're not going to be double teaming the slot on a little in-breaking route. You just can't get another guy there quick enough.
A little bit of a baby CD situation where you're moving all over the field, always going to be a go-to guy in the red zone, a go-to guy on first down, scored 12 times, 115 catches. This was a really spectacular year. I don't want the performances of Chase, you know, and Jefferson to somehow take away from how good Amon-Ra is on a weekly basis. You know, 115 catches is outrageously good.
And he will not be someone that I have concerns about the OC change. Like,
no,
you, like, I think they're very valid and fair questions to be like, how good will Goff be? Jameson Williams, the breakout. We got a new like Amon-Ra though. I won't need to give any discount in ADP just at price.
Yeah, sometimes players, it's them, and sometimes it's scheme. Sometimes it's both. For instance, on the Dynasty show a couple weeks ago, I was talking about Jalen McMillan, you know, a second half rookie breakout, and maybe you call your shot and try to get him now. And when we looked at the tape, I didn't think he was bad by any means, but it wasn't him toasting guys. It was just these schemes that just kept getting him open. It was the second wide receiver across from Mike Evans for this Liam Cohen system. Liam Cohen leaving. Oh my gosh. Bookland, if you have not seen. You have to. If you haven't seen, then you're just
not
on social media.
How do we not have
media.
That clip already?
Oh, we'll get
seriously,
it.
We got to put that on the soundboard. If we can take it. If we can handle it.
Can we?
I cringe,
the board might explode.
I cringe into my body.
Yes.
When Liam Cohen is saying his Duval. What a goober, man. What an absolute. I've never seen a goober like this before. You had the pew, pew, pew from John Gannon a couple years ago, and you're like, oh, that guy's a nerd. That guy's a superhero, awesome, marine. I mean, John Gannon is...
That's a man's
That's a man's man. I can't believe...
Dude.
Like, I'll be honest, I never sat there and watched interviews with Liam Cohen. Like
almost does Riz face.
You know, you see a press conference here or there, but I didn't know Liam Cohen's personality. You can watch one word.
I know too much now.
One word from this man, and you know his personality. And it's like, how did he get hired as a head coach? Anyways, I was saying something else. Don't remember.
But can we get a podcast of him and Russ?
Oh, man. Oh, that would be...
Would that be the end of the world?
I think people would have to listen to it with their fingers in their ears. You know what I mean? How you watch like a movie that's embarrassing through your fingers.
Like a scary movie?
Yeah, exactly. I remember what I was saying.
Unlimited.
So, yeah, you're close. I think what you were looking for was
unlimited diarrhea. Unlimited.
Anyways, so when Liam Cohen leaves, I worry a little bit more about McMillan because it was a scheme thing. With Amon-Ra St. Brown, the offensive coordinator change, the in sync go to quick targets that are between Goff and Amon-Ra St. Brown, I'm not worried about it at all.
Those are your top three. We'll take a break. We'll get into the rest of the names. Incredibly, Brian Thomas Jr. comes in at number 4, and this was an ascension over the course of the year. His consistency rank, number 8. Still insanely
from a rookie?
Amazing from
That's
a rookie.
That's fantastic.
But finishes at 4 overall while being drafted as the wide receiver, 47 off the board. 63% good, 25% great, 25% bust. Which means that from rookie, Brian Thomas Jr., you got a higher percentage of his games as great. 20 points. I didn't know if it was over that. But you had a higher percentage from Brian Thomas than Amon-Ra, than Justin Jefferson.
And you see wide receivers get better as the season goes on when they are a rookie. Obviously, he started looking, passing the eye test, playing well. But it was towards the midpoint of the season. Some injuries happened both to Trevor Lawrence and to Christian Kirk.
But and Gabe Davis and Evan Engram.
But the shift happened where it was like, okay, this is our primary offensive weapon. In the passing and receiving, like it doesn't even matter. It's quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end. Brian Thomas Jr. is our primary weapon. They had a week 12 bye week, okay? From that point forward, week 13 on, and this is including week 18 just because I have the data and I want to maximize the amount of total games, his consistency rank would have been the number 1 wide receiver during that time. He was that good, and that was with Mac Jones.
Double-digit targets every week after the bye week.
So I do believe he established at the end of this year that he is their offensive leader. So next year, speaking of Liam Cohen, he comes in as the new Jaguars head coach. And, oh, it just makes me cringe because when you do it, here's the problem. Here's the real problem. sometimes there are, like, in a horror movie, there is a picture or, you know, The Ring, and you see that girl.
Uh-huh.
You see that scary face. When you say Duvall, I see the outline of this dude's weird comical face, and I am a little heebie-jeebied by it. So
if you say it in a mirror three times.
Oh, don't do it. He'll show up.
Now, he was a great play caller.
It was awesome. He did a great job.
People respect, so we'll reserve some judgment. Some.
I hope he's awesome.
But here's the deal is Brian Thomas Jr. also can move all over the formation. He can also come into the slot and run routes and be put into a position where he can make an impact. We saw this a little bit this year from him in terms of just you're not gonna hold him down the entire game. You might have a quarter where you don't think he's doing something like a CeeDee Lamb. He figures it out.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite things about his rookie season, which is similar to Malik Nabers, is that they used him everywhere and that they used him not just everywhere in the formation, but in the field. They'd go, you know, screen to him. They'll use him in the middle range.
Get the ball,
you know,
in his hand.
10 to 15 yards. They'll take deep shots. He was absolutely everywhere. So it makes it really hard to guard players like that. That's what Justin Jefferson can do. He can go anywhere on the field, so you can't plan for him the same.
He was in the 85th percentile for targets per route run, 97th percentile for yards per route run, 92nd percentile for target percentage compared to all the rookies in the last decade, 99th percentile in zone coverage yards per route run. He was definitely a dominator. I don't think it's going to stop with the return of a Christian Kirk or Gabe Davis here and there.
Could it stop with the return of Trevor Lawrence?
Not
upgrade at quarterback.
Probably not in a way that will matter for how you draft him. Obviously won't be of value the way he was this past year. I guess the question I have too, and it kind of dovetails into dynasty talk, but like from what you saw from Brian Thomas and what you know you're getting with Liam Cohen and
Duvall.
Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah. Oh, there we got the real one.
We got it, everybody.
All right, hold on. Okay, play it again.
Duvall.
Yeah, it's bad. Oh, man. It's bad. I thought it's a little bit better.
You need the head.
Hearing the audio, it's a little bit better.
Yeah.
It's a little bit
with
better.
With the smile. It was the face and the smile. Ah. And I don't want to, you know, I was like, oh, why would you hire him as head coach? Mostly from just a vibes thing. I think he could be a very good head coach. So, Jags fans, don't be upset. Like, I think hopefully you got a great hire.
But be upset.
But, like, be weirded out is all I'm saying. Like, you don't have to. You football-wise, he might be great. Just be a little weirded out.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Would you rather have Brian Thomas Jr. or Malik Nabers in a dynasty?
I love the question. It is a very fair question. I know my answer.
I think it's a fair-ish question. It's still Malik
for me. Yeah, it's Nabers for me as well. But he is very, very high
up. It's when you move into, like,
Marvin.
Is your confidence in your scouting process and of Marv being like
my confidence in my scouting process in Marv
is it strong enough to fight off Brian Thomas?
Is very strong. It is 100% strong enough to fight off any negative connotations of failure from a disappointing rookie season. But my scouting of Marv includes now his rookie year, and same with Brian Thomas. And Brian Thomas has usurped him to me.
That's such a good way to put it. They added to both their resumes, and if you were redrafting, I would take Brian Thomas Jr.
Yeah, I mean, Brian
if
Thomas.
If I was an NFL team, I would actually take Brian Thomas
Brian
Jr.
Brian Thomas Jr. in startup dynasty, you're talking about probably the wide receiver 5, 6, 7. He's in that range, like Chase, Jefferson, CeeDee Lamb, probably Amon-Ra ahead of him. And then you're taking the shot on Nabers or Puka or these guys. So he's very, very high. And I think he'll be a first-round pick next year in redraft.
Let's talk about a player that kind of went the opposite direction. Not a lot, but a little. Just like some of those guys at the front where Chase was drafted as wide receiver 4. Last year's sweetie, Mr. CeeDee Lamb. Mm-hmm. Not DeeDee Westbrook. CeeDee Lamb was drafted as the wide receiver 2, finished at 5. Consistency of 11, though. 20% bust games. That wasn't part of the CeeDee experience last year at all. Still had 20% great games, 53% good. Lost his quarterback, who went on IR in week 10. His first half consistency was 5, second half 18. We have a reason for that.
I'm so impressed, like genuinely impressed by CeeDee Lamb this year. He probably was more impressive this year than he was last year when he was the wide receiver one. To lose Dak, to be playing with a shoulder that looked like you should not be playing with this injury.
You shouldn't be out of bed.
No, you.
The man should be laid up watching Netflix.
And that arm should be in a sling.
Yes.
Do not use that arm. Or go out and play football on it and get tackled on it every single week. He's doing that with backup quarterbacks, and he still finishes as the wide receiver five. Even if you look at just the seven games played without Dak Prescott, he's on a 1,300-yard pace, very involved. So, I don't have a smidge. I will be drafting him next year like I did going into this season, personally.
Which then adds kind of our commentary on Brian Schottenheimer. I like the consistency. Like, if you told me that they had went out, like, I don't want to defend Jerry Jones and the Cowboys, but I'm going to for a second.
Okay.
I don't think they're in a position where they can make a right move ever now. Okay.
I hear what you're saying.
That's actually, because you know what? If they went out and they made Deion Sanders the highest paid coach in football and brought him out, paid his buyout of Colorado and brought him to the NFL, you're just the same old Cowboys doing the flashy thing for the, you know, it's the way their draft picks work. You finally took some offensive linemen for a while. Well, now you're not taking the big – why didn't you take the running back you needed and the big flashy player? Then you take the flashy player. Why didn't you go safe? Look, Brian Schottenheimer is boring. He's a boring hire.
Mm-hmm.
Might be the right hire.
He could be, and obviously they do know more about Schottenheimer than we do. They've worked with him for years. They know his capabilities. And so you've got to have a little bit of trust there.
We were wrong. We were wrong with the departure.
We mocked the Mike McCarthy
Kellen
hire.
Moore and the departure of Kellen Moore and the replacement of Brian Schottenheimer translating to a worse season for CD and less production on the offense. And both Dak and CD were better with that. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I agree with the premise that just about everything they do is going to be scrutinized and kind of you're going to be smelling it like you're smelling a fart. You're looking for something bad. I do think if they went out and hired Ben Johnson, you know, we would have universally said, wow, great hire. That's that, you know, I think they can make picks that will be liked, but you're going to primarily with the Cowboys just have pessimism right now because it's fun to say things at Jerry Jones's expense.
Yeah, it's dysfunctional. And to be fair, he says some crazy things, man.
He says them at his expense. The last one. Oh, brother.
That's not the first time he said that.
No, he has an old man definition of some of the words he said.
I think he's just trolling now.
No.
No, he's not.
No, that wasn't a troll. I watched it.
No, that's got a different meaning than we can't even talk about that.
Yeah, we can't say on this show.
But CeeDee Lamb, you got all the confidence in the world. I have confidence as well. If there had been a tremendous like change at the quarterback position because they made a different decision, a different head coach is going to run something completely, you know, you need a running back and a running game. That was the departure from last year to get more consistent high-performing games. But I'm not worried about
my,
no Brandon Cooks. He's a free agent.
If the wide receivers or the running backs change for the better or the worse, either way, it changes nothing for CeeDee Lamb. The only thing that could change anything for CeeDee Lamb is if Dak Prescott on his recovery, you know, isn't ready to go or something, and that does not appear to be the situation.
Yes, maybe Schottenheimer's the right guy, and it's like 2 years ago, the Cowboys' offense was incredible. This past year, you know, it ranks near the bottom. Like, for me, I would not have been nervous for CeeDee Lamb, regardless of any coach that comes in. It's the offense as a whole that I'm not sure if Schottenheimer's the right guy. Because I want this Dallas offense as high-powered as possible for more scoring opportunities for CeeDee Lamb. Because he will get his targets, but we need touchdowns.
Well, this is not a name we've got to talk about on this show. Ever.
Oh,
it's, when we're talking about the truth.
Feels good, man. Feels good.
Number six. In year number six. For the very first time ever, a top 10 fantasy wide receiver coming in at six, Terry McLaurin.
Yes.
At 29 years old. That is not young.
Who doesn't, like honestly, who doesn't love Terry McLaurin?
If
you don't love Terry McLaurin, you got to look in the mirror and figure out what the flaw is in you.
Bucks fans?
I don't know. I feel like you can be in division, hate Washington, and look at the career of Terry McLaurin and go, dude, that guy is a baller, and that guy has put up with so much garbage. So I am so happy.
Been a team captain forever for them. Great dude, great player, and it was nice to see him be able to have – he's a very fast player, right? He's got speed and strength combined, and it's so nice to see when those type of players can be running on the field and the ball is placed just in front of them.
Right.
And you see what they can do, and that happened over and over and over with Jaden Daniels putting the ball in stride where you don't have to come back to the ball to catch it. You don't have to stop. You don't have to jump and dive and end your run, because this is a guy who can have great run after the catch potential, very similar to DJ Moore, where if you can place the ball right, you're going to have massive big plays. Terry McLaurin was a big play machine this year, which he really hadn't had the opportunity to be.
And he was literally almost identical against top defenses, bottom defenses, home, road, 19% great. That's the same as Jefferson. 69% good games. Amazing.
Nice.
25% bust games. Just a dynamic playmaker through and through all season long. One of the best picks in fantasy. Drafted in the late sixth round. Consistency rank was 7, so right by his finish. 9-9 first and second half. 82 for 1096 and 13. If you want to pick it apart, 13 touchdowns is going to be real tough for Terry McLaurin to do again.
And that is everything. He had 117 targets this year, caught 82 of them, so a 70% catch rate. That is, you know, like by far the highest of his career. But even with those things, he was still just under 1,100 receiving yards. That's 1,100 yards. That's excellent. But 1,100 yards is not usually a receiver of this finish. That's the fewest receiving yards by a top six fantasy wide receiver since 2017 when Jarvis Landry did it. So it's the
13 touchdowns.
13. So they're more than likely there will be touchdown regression. So Terry McLaurin's ADP is going to be one of those, like, hopefully we all keep cool heads and he is not drafted like he's going to get 13 touchdowns.
I think because of his age, you know, he'll be 30. And a lot of times people really back off. And also the fantasy community is so much smarter than 7-8 years ago, where ADP is closer to right. There are fewer hits off of the waiver wire because we're targeting people correctly. I think cool heads will prevail and he won't be overinflated. 4 years ago, Terry McLaurin would have been overdrafted. And even though he's great, he might wind up on our bust list for where he's going. I don't think that'll happen this season.
It's just nice to see somebody finally get that opportunity to shine.
Yes.
And he will have that opportunity again next year with Jaden, and more primetime games will be coming Washington's way, no question. Malik Nabers at 7. Wouldn't say it's a consistent year.
It's a weird year.
7 is just doesn't feel right at all. His consistency rank was 13. That feels about right.
That still even seems high.
I would say here's the story of Malik Nabers in summary. His first half was number 7 in consistency, but he missed 2 games due to injury, so that's a little bit of a distortion. Then the second half was 23rd, and really from weeks 5 through 14, that is not a small amount of time, irrelevant player.
But guy you played every week.
But a guy you played every week. So actually, he hurt you. Because 5 to 14 is a huge stretch. It's the main chunk of the season. He started with 3 straight top 6 finishes in weeks 2, 3, and 4. So he set you up to, like, I just found a diamond in the rough. It wasn't his fault, right? The quarterback position was rotating through different starters. The team was a disaster. But injury, which was the concussion, I believe.
I think so. I think you're right.
And then, so he missed 2 games. Then he comes back.
I will say this.
Doesn't finish inside the top 25 for that entire stretch.
So I don't think he crushed dynasty managers during that time. You never had the big game. But of those 7 games played during that stretch, which one of those weeks was a bye week, he had 2 bust games. And that's actually a really good number for a wide receiver. Wide receivers bust more than you think unless you're the cream to the crimp.
He was wide receiver 33. from weeks 7 through 14.
But with like a consistent like 10 points every week. It just felt like every week was 10 points. So I'm not saying he was very good during that time. He also had a quarterback change during that time. Week 10, Daniel Jones was put out to pasture. And so, he dealt with less than Daniel Jones. You were already starting with a problem.
Yeah.
And then they're like, how would you like a bigger problem? You got to see some flashes during the fantasy playoffs of monster games. We know his talent is there. 11 targets per game. They weren't good targets. There's going to be the same questions about Malik Nabers next year as there were this year, which is, how do we feel about the new quarterback? Because we're not sure. And I'm probably going to err on the side of buying into the talent of Malik Nabers because I don't want to be left out.
Yeah, he's the kind of player that when it's going, you're really happy he's on your team. I just don't know where that's going to be when it comes to the draft. And it's going to depend on who that quarterback's going to be. And
where do they draft?
I think there's going to be a lot of variance.
Are they two?
Let me
pull it up real quick.
Yeah, you pull that up.
Three. Tennessee, Cleveland, Giants.
They were tied or trailing on 90% of his routes.
That makes sense.
So that's wild.
That's what I felt.
Yeah, you kind of felt like, he's one of those situations with that offense where you felt like, some just are like a knife through butter. You watch Cincinnati and it's up and down the field. This one felt like it was you need 1,000 cuts to finally get a scoring opportunity to finish at 7 overall with 7 receiving touchdowns.
He's that dude. He
170 targets. That is what I will have a hard time passing on.
Yes, he is a dominant one who is an alpha wide receiver demanding the ball, can handle it. Jamar Chase hasn't always been this year's Jamar Chase, but you look at the talent of him and you say, we know he can be. That's what I see with Malik Nabers. Now, obviously Jamar Chase has Joe Burrow and that's a massive difference. It's possible. I believe in, who was it? I think it was Daniel Jeremiah's latest mock. It might've been his first mock of this season, but the last one I saw, I believe that he had the Giants getting the first quarterback off the board with the Titans and Browns both going defensive players. Who knows?
Was it Cam Ward?
Yeah, Cam Ward. I believe that was who he went.
Yeah, they're in a position where, look, we've seen some rookie quarterbacks make a quick impact. And
especially recently.
And you really can't get worse than what he got last year. That 170 targets needs to be like multiplied by .75. Yeah, .65 or something with what you got. At 8, another surprise name, maybe definitely, compared to where he was drafted in the 9th round. Jackson Smith and Jigba, a tale of two halves, gentlemen.
Oh, yeah.
Finishes with a consistency of 19. First half, 45. First half, weeks 1 through 8, singing the same song for JSN.
If you were a dynasty manager who in a dynasty league traded for JSN in the middle of this year, I would love to see those trades because you probably got a top wide receiver prospect, a top, if we were doing a redraft startup, he's going to be one of the first 12 wide receivers drafted, and you probably got him for jack squat because halfway through this year, you're like, well, I guess JSN wasn't really. It was a year and a half, and it confirmed our fears from last year, and he took over.
To go from a first half consistency of 45 to a second half of 5 overall is so impressive. Now, I don't know what angle I'm going to take. I know the truth of JSN; he's a very good player. You also had a second half of the season where inexplicably DK Metcalf disappeared. You've now fired your offensive coordinator. You got very limited play time and production from your running game in the second half of the year. Fighting desperately, Geno Smith could not throw touchdowns. Seattle's just kind of a weird mess for me, and I don't know if I'm going to feel better about them at any point in this offseason or anything's going to happen to change that.
Let me make the pro argument for you, okay? Tyler Lockett is done with the Seahawks. Even if they bring him back, he's done. You know what I mean? Like, he was done this year. He doesn't have much left to give. we kind of saw the gas tank run empty on Tyler Lockett. DK Metcalf has kind of shown what he is, which is a really dominant physical force and not the greatest wide receiver. During that second half of the year with Geno Smith, 9 games played, he caught 76% of his passes. This is a go-to guy who can be reliable, would have been on a pace for over 105 receptions. And, Geno, I expect to be back as of right now. He was used differently than he was used his rookie year where everything was behind the line of scrimmage. You got to see him work down the field where he belongs and succeed. So I do think going forward, like, who would you think next year, even forget fantasy, just from a game plan perspective, they're going into 2025, who do they view as their primary wide receiver?
Metcalf.
See, I think it is JSN.
It'll be Metcalf. I genuinely
so?
Believe that. Yeah, I think Metcalf is still the alpha there. You know, JSN is a very, very, very good player, but I don't know what his touchdown cap is. Not anywhere near Metcalf's. I mean, Metcalf could score 15. Had a weird, bumpy year. Geno's a free agent in 2 years. I just don't know what it's going to look like. I think the average depth of target for JSN was very low this year.
And I will throw out, if you've been with the show for a year, I've kind of have these. So Kyle says 9.2 ADOT.
That's low.
That's not where you want it to be for a number one fantasy type of a wide receiver. But just looking historically back on ADP, right? So guys who finish in the top 24 for the first time in year two.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good sign?
No, they're hit right in year three. I know, it's really
that
weird.
That don't make no sense.
It's not that they're bad. It's just that the hit rate of returning he's drafted as the wide receiver 12, you expect him to score X amount of points, right?
Mm-hmm.
Their hit rate of getting to their X, the points they're being drafted to hit, they're only hitting it about 50% of the time. It's a really, really weird
thing. I'm not sure I understand what you said.
Okay. I'm trying
to. Do you get it?
I'm trying to do it off the
you're
fly.
You're saying
of
that
how
after, if a player jumps up into the category
a player finishes as a top 24 wide receiver for the first time in their
year
career
two,
in year two.
And okay. Then they're drafted proportional to that. They don't deliver on their expectations the next year in year three.
Yes.
50-50.
Yeah, see, he's a glass half empty guy. 50-50, I can be a glass half full guy. 50% of the time they do.
Well,
the
look, JSN.
Guys who do it in year one and, shockingly, guys who do it in year three for the first time, their hit rates are tremendous.
That's just a weird weird stat.
But here's it why. Let me just poke a little bit of hole in that logic. If they did a little
holes?
Bit of holes,
holes?
If they did it in year three, you are going to be far more suspect of them succeeding, which means where they are drafted going into year four will be much lower. When a wide receiver hits it in year two, of course their ADP is going to be very high. And if your ADP is very high, it's already baked in a higher likelihood of failure. Like if you are drafted as the wide receiver one, I would bet you the wide receiver one drafted every single year, 90% of the time fails. Because there's nowhere to go but down.
Yeah, but these guys aren't necessarily drafted like that. I'm just saying it's a really weird, it feels like a strange anomaly that the way that we think about wide receivers of year two is the real breakout year, but
you will not be happy with 100 for 1,106 from JSN.
No, you will not.
Not that he will do that again, but that's what his numbers were. You won't be happy if that's what it is. If his average depth of target and touchdowns don't go up, you'll just be kind of unhappy. And it's Geno. It's the offense. It's the new coordinator. It's the division. I am not saying I'm out on JSN. I think he was explosive and amazing from week 9 through 16. I'm just saying that the first 8 weeks, what happened there?
Yeah, that's
right?
Fair.
I mean, what happened there? What happened to 17 weeks of last year, first 8 weeks of this year, and then that stretch, is that a defining change? You'd be like, yes, definitely, except for the guy calling the plays is gone.
Right. That's fair. But a breakout that happens at a team that says, oh, okay, we see more what a player can do, can put him into that mix.
Yes, it definitely can.
I'm really going to be on DK Metcalf watch. He's 28 years old. He's got a $31 million cap hit this year. And this is his final year contractually. So do they extend him so that they can free up some room? That makes sense. But also, do they extend a 28-year-old who's had a down season when they're wanting to get to running and they've got some cap issues? Like, or do you look to trade him? I don't know, but I'm on Metcalf watch because he's been
in those rumor mills for a couple of years.
Yeah, and he could have a massive impact on JSN. You know, obviously,
yeah, I feel like this has been too accidentally negative about JSN. I'm just trying to look at the big picture of that offensive coordinator leaving and my lack of confidence in Geno, because Geno can go out and throw under 20 touchdowns like he did this year in the relevant fantasy weeks, or he can go out like he did a couple years ago and be better. Something didn't work with Grubb from the team's general, you know, from their perspective of the coach and the team. Whatever that was, we're going to find out.
Well, we shouldn't. Why? Grubb is unhealthy. I mean, we should have none.
Grubbs.
That. Grubb. Yeah. Grubb. Yeah, well, I'm just saying, no, like, you don't call.
I mean, the family would be the Grubs.
Grub. You know what I mean? Like, when you're eating grub, you're eating like just
grub,
like,
is bugs.
It is the Grubs Lion are bugs. King, but it is also junk food.
Not just the Lion King either. Also life.
What?
No, grubs. I think Mike's right here.
No, I've only grubs are a common way to refer to a bunch of edible bugs.
Go to the Deucers. We gotta pull these.
Okay,
guys.
All right. I've got the definitive answer. We don't need the Deucers. Sorry, guys. I would love.
All right, get away from the Deucers.
Go away. All right, grub. I said define grub. Here's what Google says. There are two definitions. Noun, one, food, a popular bar serving excellent grub.
Yeah, Grubhub.
Yeah, exactly. It's grub, but that's always bad food. That's the reference I was making. The other one, the larva of an insect, especially a beetle. We're both right.
Look at that.
Yeah, I wasn't. I mean, I definitely didn't disagree with Grubhub.
Okay.
But okay.
How many? I mean, this is more rhetorical. Just of curious, like, the Seahawks won 10 games.
Mm-hmm.
They went 10-7.
Right.
And this guy's first year being an OC, and they're like, yeah, see you later.
I think it was a philosophical difference.
Yes.
I believe the defensive head coach wants to run the ball more.
I think DK Metcalf got him kicked out of town.
I think they want to run a lot more. But this is interesting. Like, this is getting the juices going, because JSN is like, oh, okay, here we go. This is a player we're gonna disagree about, and his swings are gonna be wild.
I feel like they let go Pete Carroll, and then they're like, man.
What did you hear? The
I like the Pete Carroll offense better. Run the ball more.
Pete Carroll could have Russell Wilson
in
Las Vegas with Daryl Bevel as the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, it could be. It will not happen.
Oh, I think it definitely will happen.
Oh, we got to put a bet on that one.
I think we're putting Seattle back into Las Vegas. I think we're running it back. Old man edition.
I think Carroll knew exactly what he was doing when he let Russ walk. He saw him every day. I don't think he wants Russ back.
Yeah, but then he went and watched the tape of
AOC.
AOC.
Yeah.
All right, we'll take a break. Got some more names. What you don't want to do is order from Grubs Hub. If you order from Grubs Hub, you will get larva only.
Yeah.
Which, if they look like they do in The Lion King,
you're in?
I'm going to eat them.
They looked appetizing to you.
They made bugs look delicious.
Because of juicy.
Yeah.
Flavorful.
I was in.
They were well-fed bugs. Those grubs had, grubs had eaten.
What were those things eating?
Grubs.
Probably corn. You know what I mean? they were fat and finished on corn.
That's a
corn-fed bug.
That's right.
Number nine was Drake London. Came in at 10 in consistency, 9 in the first half, 14 in the second half. Little bump in the road from weeks 11 through 16 while the quarterback situation got jostled around. 56% good, 6% great, 13% bust. Drafted as the wide receiver 10, finishes as the consistency rank of 10. Did Drake London just do what we thought he'd do?
He did. He broke out. He showed that he's capable of not only just being an NFL wide receiver one, but a true target dominator. And this is the one player. We made the philosophical decision to chop off week 18. Doesn't count for fantasy. There's so many players that on a case-by-case basis, played half a game, played some of the game. We just wanted to know, the season we just had, how was it? This is the biggest exception where it hurt his numbers. In week 18, he was the number one wide receiver in fantasy football, and this was a very important game while it was being played for the Falcons. So this was real football where he dominated. And he needed to dominate, and he came through.
What would that – did you have that? What it would have moved him to?
I don't have that in front of me because I don't have everybody else's Week 18 data.
Yeah, I mean, look, the first half of the season when there was some stability there, number nine in consistency, finished at nine overall, good in all situations, a little bit better at home than on the road, finishes, I mean, there's 158 target season. That's what you wanted to see. Always going to be a threat for double-digit touchdowns in this offense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you had to say, if you had to list, you know, five guys in the NFC that can do it, how do you not have Drake London on that list with that physical profile? So,
well, and the best part about that week 18 is that that's Michael Penix. Yeah, you know, yeah. the big change here, that he had the consistency when he had Kirk Cousins. And maybe Kirk Cousins wasn't what they needed. He wasn't the Kirk Cousins of old, but he was pretty good with Kirk Cousins. And then you had that change, and you have a little bit of fear. But two of those last games with Michael Penix were 106 yards, and then the next one was the 187 and two. That's fantastic.
And then we'll round it out with number 10 slash number 15, the Garrett Wilson, Davante Adams, Jets combination. Garrett Wilson finished at 10, consistency of 17, a second half consistency of 26. After the arrival of Davante Adams, who was a consistency rank of 20, but in the second half was 13. These guys had very similar season long numbers. Adams missed a couple of weeks for Las Vegas before the trade. He had the higher percentage of good games, barely higher percentage of great games, more bust games, again, transitioned halfway during the year. What are we doing here? Aaron Glenn, new head coach of the Jets. They keep asking him if Aaron Rodgers is going to be back. He keeps giving the same answer. We're in evaluation mode.
Just say no, dude.
Yeah, just say no. The truth. We all know it.
It's really hard because
that
would be the answer you want to say, as long as you can answer the question of who's your quarterback with a good answer. But when you're an NFL head coach and you could start your AOC season or you could start your Pittsburgh Russell Wilson season, you'd rather have the Russell Wilson season because you don't want to have your first year in New York be circling the drain with a nobody quarterback. That's all I'm saying about that is that, look, it probably won't be Aaron Rodgers, but who's it going to be then?
So the list of free agents here, I'm trying to pull it up real quick. So we have, well, you have the Sam Darnold decision that the Minnesota Vikings have to make.
You're not bringing Darnold to New York.
I mean,
bring him back home, baby.
Probably not.
If that happens, you can have all my possessions.
It probably won't happen. I mean, speaking of not going back, Zach Wilson.
Those are both free agents?
Yeah, exactly.
So they can pick all their old guys.
So, I mean, Lance, Jacoby, Heineke, Mariota.
They
can go for a quarterback with the number seven draft pick overall.
Fields
or Russ.
Fields, Jameis. Dude, send Jameis to the Jets.
That's how I would be in on Garrett Wilson.
Every other name you said would terrify me for Garrett Wilson.
Yes. Yeah, very.
And then Davante Adams, I don't think, is hanging around with that Aaron Rodgers. I really don't. So if you want to give a point back in the favor of Wilson, look, Wilson doesn't even want to be there. Wilson's not going to get another contract there unless it's a rookie quarterback that shows Bo Nix potential.
Yeah, the Wilson, his future is so
Garrett
so
Wilson
murky.
Is a good to very good wide receiver. And I don't feel like that should be an insult, but it feels like it is.
Yeah, I think that is appropriately the truth. Like, he is not a great wide receiver. He's a very good wide receiver. He'll have a quarterback problem. It seems like, based on the names you read and the draft capital that they have at number seven, that they...
I mean, Kirk Cousins?
Should probably be in... Well, yeah,
Cousins in New York?
I think the old quarterback off the Achilles...
Yeah.
Probably. They don't want to rotate to the other one?
Probably not going to do it. It's funny because they either rotate to someone they drafted or they do another bad job drafting. I mean, you know.
That's why I think Rodgers could still be there.
Yeah. Well, at the very least, it does make sense that Aaron Glenn would have the company line, because if they're wanting to draft a quarterback, if they're wanting to sign a quarterback, it doesn't behoove them to say, no, Aaron Rodgers is not going to be our quarterback. They want to say, yeah, we're gonna evaluate. Maybe he will be our quarterback. And then, bam, I got the number seven pick in there. But I do think that when Aaron Glenn finishes that conference and goes to his office and shuts the door, he's like, oh, I hope not.
Yeah, there's a lot of drama that comes along with that for sure. I'm starting to think a quarterback's pretty important, though. for these teams.
Yeah, this year was the first year I started thinking quarterbacks matter.
Right.
You know, yeah. I think they make an impact on the
NFL
game.
It's
going to
make a difference.
They should protect these guys.
Yeah. So right. One of these guys will have to be a bridge.
And yeah, I mean, maybe. They could bring in and start week one a rookie.
But you still have to have someone else on the roster just
to compete.
Case.
To compete.
Like, and there's no one in the free agent quarterback list that is, it's like incredible, because that's
you
rare,
could have
rare,
a rookie
to begin.
You could have a rookie go compete with Justin Fields. I mean, that would make sense.
There's a few names where, like,
give me Jameis or give me death.
I was gonna. The last name is gross, but if Cooper Rush goes and starts the year for the Jets,
gosh,
give me Jameis or give me
Jameis. We want for entertainment, but not. There won't be victories associated with him.
Well, not for the
fantasy
Jets.
Not for the Jets. Yeah, but lots of fantasy.
We're not here trying to get the Jets wins.
No.
That's an impossible task.
We will try. We're going to get through a bunch more names on the next episode. But first, we have this.
Fantasy Face-Off, presented by DraftKings.
Just a couple cool dudes wearing crowns over here.
It's weird, man.
Somehow, Jason and I...
Weird. You guys look really different.
We do. We do look a little different than you're used to seeing us. Travis Kelce, I had him under 70.5. He had 19.
You got it.
But Josh Allen, that was a little bit tighter. Jason, and by the way, Jason had these same picks. He had Josh Allen over 229. I had him over 228.
Unfortunately, we did not get.
It was close, though.
We didn't get the he finished at 229.
That was, yeah. It was 8 yards away. It was
8 yards from us splitting, even though we have the same exact.
Mike hit his more than 36.5 rushing yards for Kareem Hunt, but did not get the Josh Allen rushing.
Got my one attempt up there, but he didn't get in.
So we've got our picks for the Super Bowl with these crowns upon our heads. I hope they mean good things for these picks. I'm going to go with a player I think will have a surprise impact in the Super Bowl.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
But is important for this team. I'm going to go Hollywood Brown over 41.5, more than 41.5 receiving yards.
Okay.
And then I'm going to go Saquon more
taking the rushing
than 133.5 rushing receiving combo.
Oh, I was really close. I was really close to taking that exact one.
The,
when I was looking
the,
at
the
rush
receive combination, I like, because it's only, I think it's about, what's his rushing
his
line?
Rush
118?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm going to take the rush-receiving combination.
All right.
I am on the Eagles side. I'm going to take Jalen Hurts more than 213 passing yards.
Ooh.
He's done it recently. He did it this last week against Washington. Last time they were in a Super Bowl against Mahomes, he threw for 300. So 213, I think, is a line he can get over. And I'm going back to the well from the easiest victory ever last week. Travis Kelce. Less than 63.5 receiving yards against a very good Philly defense.
It seems like it should be that way. Dallas Goedert, I'm going to go more than 51.5. And
pairs nicely with
mine. And Andy, we were on different sides here, but Dallas Goedert really has, at least over the playoff run, he has been a go-to guy here.
It's just wild because I think that line for him, that 51.5, is a yard bigger or a yard more than Devontae Smith.
Yeah, he's been massively involved. The Chiefs were a team that we could get tight end points during the fantasy season, so I'm going to take my chances there. And then I'm going to take Patrick Mahomes less than 251.5 passing yards. That line of 250 is kind of surprising to me.
The Eagles defense, man, they are
very
good.
They are legit.
Well, that was the Fantasy Face-Off presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. It's the last chance to bet on the NFL this season. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use the code BALLERS. That's the code BALLERS. Place any touchdown bet on Super Bowl 59 and get it matched as a bonus bet in the amount of your original bet. Big weekend coming up only on DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours, as I said. We'll be digging into the wide receiver truth on our next episode. Looking forward to it. And if you want a bonus episode, go to jointhefoot.com. Become a member of the Foot Clan tomorrow, the Footcast.
Goodbye.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age and eligibility varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. One bonus bet per customer based on amount of initial touchdown bet. Maximum reward varies. Bonus bet expires 2/16/25 at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time. For additional terms and responsible gaming resources, see sportsbook.draftkings.com/promos.